Summer is always a period of nostalgia. The warm, sunny rays after a dip in the Mediterranean reminds me of better times. The sea sets the scene. Simpler times, where we would eat ice cream in the sea after being told it will give us a tummy ache, dive and hunt for treasure, which resulted in heavy pockets of dirt, sand, shells and stone. But one permanent memory takes me back to a small shack next to a rocky beach in the north of Malta. I'm probably 7 at that time. My cousins are all getting dried up from the beach. The water drips down a cobbled stone way into some dry bushes. The lizards bake in the afternoon sun. We are all feeling lightheaded. It's siesta time. Sitting around us is a small group of elderly people, all on metal-legged chairs with brown wooden seats, the same ones that you'd find in schools. Cigarettes in hand and a handful of cards. Distinctively, a red card with hearts got stuck in my mind. They were playing a game. Some coins were involved, mere change, but they played for hours. They laughed, teased each other, shouted, and just enjoyed their time. Fast forwarding to April 26, 2025, and I am at the Barberini Museum in Rome at none other than the Caravaggio 2025 exhibition, and I see right in front of me a five of hearts. One that reminded me of that little shack in Meliha. What I had in front of me, though, was not a scene of old men enjoying a game of cards. This is a trick. One innocent man is being fooled by two others. This artwork is called The Card Sharps. And today, we lay the cards straight on Campus 103.7. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. This is Jeremy Greck once again, a man who has no authority to be speaking about this subject, but I adore Caravaggio, and thus I have studied his work quite intensively. For those of you joining us today for the first time, welcome to Caro Caravaggio, a space where we dissect the art of none other than Michelangelo. No, not the Sistine Chapel guy. Him we can do later. But this is the menace of Malta. The ex-knight, the ex-painter, the ex-poet, and the ex-living, technically, Caravaggio. Today, we will be unveiling yet another challenge, but unlike last episode where we only saw one figure coming to life featuring a bunch of fruit, this time we shed light on three figures. Luckily, no fruit. So, that's a bonus. Now, my lovely listeners, allow me to introduce today's painting. One taking place over a gambling table. Not with friends, but alas, strangers. Feeling lucky? Alright. So, let's give it a roll of the dice and put our head in the game. There are cheaters around everywhere. It's a jungle out there.
Oh,
Episode 2 of Caro Caravaggio on Campus 103.7, and today we focus on the Carchops, a painting done in either 1595 or 1596. These dates do differ from one source to the other. However, for this series specifically, I'll mostly be using the Taschen book series, the 40-year edition, and we'll be sticking to those dates. If anything's wrong, we can blame it on them. Jokes and debated dates aside, this was a truly career-defining masterpiece. It is thanks to Carchops, thought to be the last one painted at Cavalier d'Arpino's workshop, this is where Merisi stayed upon arriving in Rome, this artwork earned him his patronage. And now Caravaggio moves to the house of the new owner of the piece, Cardinal Del Monte. This is a huge step forward in his career. A triumph, of course. But what is this painting that we are talking about? Let's visualize. The painting is a large one. The canvas alone stands at 94.2 centimeters in height and 130.9 centimeters in width. The scene is set around a table. We have a young and innocent man dressed in his finest of attire, besides two others. The boy is confident, about to deal his hand when all of a sudden, a slightly older moustached gentleman leans in to learn his hand, and thus he signals his friend. This isn't a fair game. This is a scam. Our boy here is being hustled by two Roman con artists. The moment is frozen in time just as the moustached man indicates the card number to his associate, caught red-handed. This is a scene that Caravaggio would have definitely been familiar with, but let's actually paint it now. For now, let's remove the characters. The canvas is bare. You only see a yellowish plastered wall with the light coming in from the top left corner. There is a table in the bottom left, which extends to almost the edge of the painting to the right. The table is only one-fifth of the artwork and covers only the bottom border. An intricately decorated cloth is placed on the table, showing fine, almost dull, gold-like threads woven into the light, warm red color. On the left-hand side, we can see a board with alternating isosceles triangles on it. This is a late 16th century version of backgammon. Three dice are on the wooden surface of the board. Could they be loaded dice? All of them reveal the number 2 on the side, but one die has 3 dots on top. The rest only have 1. It could be simply flipped. The dice are grouped close to a small bone-like tower where they were most probably shaken and not stirred during the game. In the painting's lower center, on the top middle of the same table, is a silver plate with cards on it. The game is well underway. On to the plate's right is a pack of cards, stacked almost uniformly on top one another. This is a gambling table, but where are we? And most importantly, who are these people? The first figure on our left takes the full force of the light on his right cheek. Another young man, very similar to that of the boy with the basket of fruit in the previous episode. Could it be Mario Minetti once again? His face tilts downwards. The boy holds 2 cards in his hands, both of them gripped tightly. The cuffs on his wrists are rolling down, carried by the weight of the silky maroon fabric that rich young boy is wearing, a fine garment making him an easy target. This collar in white with an embroidered border is finely detailed, matching in style with the elaborately decorated cuffs. He wears a black hat, folded upwards with a green feather. He reveals most of his face, as if Caravaggio told him to raise his cap for the light. He reveals some of his dark brown hair in the light as he sheds shadows on his face. Very fine threads of feather stand on top of the hat at the top. We start to approach center now, and we find a slightly older gentleman, perhaps in his late 20s, with a moustache and sideburns. In truth, a proper mustachune. A cheeky man. His body tilts towards that of the young noble. His face is full of expression, as if to replicate the old Greek theatre masks. With his head tilted to his right shoulder, he raises his right hand, clutches the pinky and the ring finger, but signals to the third crook with the middle, pointing and thumb, a number three. He reveals the young noble's hand. The moustache trickster wears a glove. We can clearly see that his gloves are a little torn. Some might think it is from use, but this is just another trick. The fingertips have been cut off so that he can feel marked cards. His clothes are quite elaborate as well. His sleeves have another pattern, but then he wears a vest with a floral design on faded blue. Only one button seems to be done, the rest are left open, revealing a white undershirt, probably concealing his belly. His left hand rests on the table for balance. A bit of the thumb is also revealed via the torn glove, and above, his expressive face is a beret like no other. A cap with a new feather, silvery white on the side and dark in the middle. It bends towards the left of the painting over the young boy. The older gentleman's left shoulder is covered up by the third figure, a younger man, almost the same age as our noble. He gives his back to the audience, however, an odd thing to do. Never give your back to the audience, that is what is preached in theatre. But wait. Above his puffy striped pantaloons in mustard yellow and Aragonian red, not only does a dagger rest on his left thigh, but cards are also found on his lower back. Two cards, to be specific. His fingers grip a possible four of clubs, and a bright red five of diamonds protrudes out from behind it. If the signal was three, is this the higher card? The upper garments are also in mustard yellow with black, more widely spread this time from his neck down to the small of his back. His sleeves are light greenish-blue, almost turquoise, with some sort of pattern embedded in his left hand, where he holds three cards tightly. One more than his opponent, unless you count the extra cards. The left side of his face shares the same illumination as that of the young noble boy. Vividly coloured, flushed by natural light, is now another feather showing bright hues of blue, white, pink, dirty red, and grey. Not as sharp as the moustached man, this one is softer and well-rounded. His expression is cautious, fully alert, eyes on the target. How much money will this young boy lose in the game? Does he know that he is being taken for a ride? Welcome back to Campus 103.7 with your host Jeremy Greg, as we are about to close off now our second episode of Caro Caravaggio. Today we delved into the car chops, still in his early phase of his life here, but we can already start to experience the light coming to life, his signature light, that is. This is just a rehearsal for the cast of Models. Soon enough, things will get darker and, in a way, holier. This was a rather different scene, showing a different genre, but we managed to take an act directly from the streets and produce it on canvas. Gamblers and hustlers are trying to rob a young man, trying to cheat him out of his money. Caravaggio, via the angle, puts us directly in the line of sight here. We are truly involved. We know that they are cheating. Their similar stripes almost suggest that they are on the same team. But what are we going to do? Should we tell him? We might risk a beating if we do, or shall we just remain silent and go on with our day? I am pretty sure that we have been exposed to such scenes in our lifetime. If not a simple game of cards being played in a shack with elders for pennies, it was playing bocce at school for football cards, or racing little metal cars for a new pair of magnets. Yes, we once played for magnets. We were young. It's now done. Think as well of those that gamble and lose hundreds and even thousands in just seconds. Man seems to be addicted to the game, and whatever you do, the house always wins. If we don't gamble with cards, marbles, toys, then it's life. It seems like we will find a way to do it, low cost or high, but anyway, what I mean to say is that if we have not seen such a thing firsthand, we must have at least been involved some way or the other, possibly without even being aware of it. Come to think of it, we aren't all that different to these 16th century Italians. The streets of Rome were bustling with courtesans, artists, gypsies, and mercenaries, and it wasn't for the faint of heart. Harsh times carved even harsher men. And soon enough, we will take a break from the profane and focus on the sacred. In our next episode, we will shed light on none other than Saint Francis in ecstasy. And with that, friends, Romans, countrymen, I thank you for lending your ears as we have come to a close of our second episode of Caro Caravaggio. In episode one, we met the boy with a basket of fruit, giving us a bit of a spicy stare. And today, one young noble was being taken for a ride by two hustlers. But next time, it's all about divinity. No criminals, just saints. If you like this radio show and want more of it, please leave us a like and a comment on our Facebook and socials. Your support definitely encourages us to produce more of this work. If you'd like to get in touch, follow me on my socials. My Instagram is greg.jeremy. As for the rest, just type my name. Thank you once again for tuning in, and we will be in touch next time on Campus 103.7. Ciao, ciao. Take a little walk. The track where the viaduct looms like a bird of doom as it ships and cracks, where secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand. Wrap you in his arms, tell you that you've been a good boy. He'll rekindle all the dreams that took you a lifetime to destroy. He'll reach deep into the hole, heal your shrinking soul, but there won't be a single thing that you can do. He's a god, he's a man, he's a ghost, he's a guru. They're whispering his name through this disappearing land, but hidden in his coat is a red right hand.
respect. You feel like an insect. Well, don't you worry, buddy, 'cause here he comes through the ghettos and the barrio and the barry and the slum. His shadow is cast wherever he stands. Stacks of green paper in his red right hand.
Catastrophic plan designed and directed by his red.